You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
Right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MoneyWeb Now podcast on this early morning of Monday, the 20th of September. If this voice is different to the one you're used to, that's because Simon Brown has chosen to take himself on a well-deserved holiday and unwisely has left some of his regular guests in charge of the show for the rest of the week. Now, as you can imagine, the pickings were slim when it came to the early Monday morning slot, hence why you're stuck with me, Henry Biddlecombe from Anchor Capital. But we'll do our best to keep things ticking along in Simon's absence. Simon, if you're listening, have a margarita for us, buddy. Now, it's been an interesting few weeks in global capital markets, and I guess it's been an interesting 18 months, hasn't it? You've got the S&P 500 at an all-time high. We're sitting around 30% higher than the pre-COVID high reached in February of last year. And there's lots of action in the East, with China's regulatory onslaught now having wiped around half of the value off of the Chinese tech sector, depending on the index you're watching. And it looks like we're currently witnessing a pretty significant deleveraging of China's red-hot property market at the same time, which could have some pretty material knock-on effects for our commodity producers. Coming up this week, you've got the U.S. Fed's Federal Open Market Committee meeting starting tomorrow with a press conference on Wednesday, and there's growing speculation that they may pre-announce the inevitable tapering of bond purchases earlier than expected. So there's a lot going on, and to help us make sense of it all, I think we've got an interesting slate of guests lined up for today's show. We've got Joe Bassett from Renegade Capital talking to us live from Carolina in the USA on the current fragility of the U.S. equity market. We've got Nick Dennis from Southridge Global Capital, one of South Africa's top-performing fund managers from last year, in fact, talking to us about some of his big ideas for the next decade. And then we have Liam Hechter from Musgrave Capital Partners in the UK, who will be talking to us about global emerging markets and why South African investors need to pay more attention to them than we have done so in the past.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
Right, so we're chatting to Joe Bassett this morning, manager of the Renegade Capital Global Macro Fund. He's coming to us live from Carolina in the USA, where it's 12:30 right now. So, Joe, thanks for staying up for us. I always enjoy reading your market updates, Joe. You're never afraid to express a view. And a couple of weeks ago, you sent out a note entitled, "Time to Pay the Piper." An ominous title if there ever was one. And I think it's true that there's always something to worry about in the capital markets, but as you point out, right now, I think it's fair to say that there are a number of factors that seem to point to a U.S. equity market that's looking increasingly vulnerable. So, Joe, why don't you talk us through some of what has you concerned at the moment?
Hey, Henry. Yeah, thanks for having me. I read the letter, I think I sent it on the 2nd of September to clients, and basically, I feel like we're really at a major inflection point where you've just had every single bit of ammo thrown at the market and everything's kind of starting to fall away. We've had the greatest expansion in history in monetary policy, and you've got all the big boys coming and saying that they're going to wind that down. That's the Fed, that's the ECB. And when we have coming up onto year-on-year contraction in that sort of expansion money supply, I think it's no question that the market's going to at least struggle at the very least to go up, but more likely to come under pressure. And that's kind of exactly what's happened over the last couple of weeks. I think we're about, as of this morning, about 5% off the highs already. And then also you've got some potential big picture effects out of things like Evergrande and China, which are starting to potentially shake some feathers loose in the market.
Yeah, it looks like we're starting to see some real capitulation on that side this morning. But look, when I read your notes, a lot of what you've mentioned is widely known, right? So the efficient market guys will argue that it's more or less all in the price. So where do you think the shocks are going to come from over the next couple of months or over the next 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. The hardest aspect to this market for long short managers, you know, guys who are, not long only, but are actively, positioning in markets and really also trying to protect clients from the downside in equity markets is that, you know, there's been very little that's fallen. So, anything that was a hedge as a short has pretty much been a loser. for the last little while. It's been very difficult to try to get any sort of pullback in equity markets, whether that's market or single stock related. It's been very difficult. I just think it's different right now because when you look at the positioning in markets, the divergence in the in breadth was just horrifying. I mean, we basically we were making multi-year lows in stocks below 200-day moving average in the Nasdaq, for instance, and we were making new highs for two and a half months while we were making 3-4 year lows in total stocks, making trading below 200-day moving averages. And I think any time that you kind of see that sort of breadth in the market, coupled with a massive shift in monetary policy, I think that all the alarm bells are really going off. And the difficult part is to really time that to the sort of day or week. But generally when you look back, and you look at it in the rearview mirror, you think, hey, that should have been pretty easy to catch. Meanwhile, it carried on for 2 weeks extra, which is not a lot of time, in the big picture, but in the short term, it feels like it was really hard to capture. So I think, if you are in my shoes and you are somebody who's looking to time the market and looking to position for these sort of things, whether to capitalize it or to protect your capital from the downside in the market, that I think the last few weeks is probably a good time to take a lot of chips out.
Right. So I mean, with that said, how are you positioned for this in your fund?
Well, I positioned the fund net short, as of the distribution of that, letter to clients. And we've been short some things like, the German DAX, short a couple, stock specific names, or short a Peloton, going into earnings. That worked out really well until, fell about 20 odd percent after earnings, and then they announced the clothing line. It regained all that, but it's kind of cold, come back off in the last few days, right, closer to the lows. I've got a few others on as well, but really just kind of taking down exposure in some of the long names that I do like, and adding some opportunistic shorts. I actually shorted a little bit of Facebook last week, and just trying to capture some of that downside beta that I think may be coming in the Nasdaq and some of the high flyers, which haven't started to break at all yet. So I'm watching those closely. Going to wait to see if momentum starts to fall over, and then maybe I'll look to take advantage of some of those as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, thanks, Joe. We'll have to leave it there. That was Joe Bassett from Renegade Capital. We'll be back after a short break with Nick Dennis.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Right. Our next guest always makes for fun conversation, probably because he's one of the more optimistic fund managers you'll meet. Nick Dennis from Southridge Global Capital, manager of their Global Equity Fund. Nick, you're probably having a chuckle at our conversation about Evergrande this morning. You don't concern yourself too much with shorter-term risks. You're a guy who likes to look at the big picture and you take a long-term view. And what I like is you've always spoken about investing in companies that stand to change the world and the rest will take care of itself. And that philosophy seems to have been working for you. I think your fund returned around 90% in US dollars last year. You won the Raging Bull Award. But I always think predicting the future is a lot easier than making money off of those predictions, right? So talk us through a little bit about how you identify those businesses that stand to benefit from the change that we see taking place in the world.
Thanks, Henry, and good morning. So I think if you want to hold a share for a long period of time, and I'm looking for multi-baggers, so companies that can go up 5x or 10x over the next, say, 5 to 10 years, I think you really need an open-ended growth opportunity. And I think typically what drives that growth will often come down to what I call the three Ps. So those are product, people, and pie. So it starts with the product, and so you need a, the company needs to sell a product that is useful, and solve some kind of problem. And it should be difficult for other companies to just, to copy that product.
Right.
And so you think of the iPhone, which is incredibly useful, or search, which is incredibly useful. The next, the second P is people. And I typically prefer, a company that is run by the founder, the person who started that company. The, it's their baby. I mean, that is, they live and breathe the company. And often those people are very smart, but they're also very, very tough. They're gritty. And quite often they, those people are good on both the big picture, but also they can get into the details and the minutiae, at the product level. And then thirdly, I'd say when it comes to pie, you want that, you want to be a company that's going after a large pie, so a large addressable market, and also ideally a growing pie. What's interesting though is because these companies are frequently, they actually created the market themselves. You know, Netflix basically created the market for streaming. Apple created the smartphone market to some extent. Often that market doesn't seem small at the get-go, but the market grows and grows over time. And I think people typically underestimate that.
Yeah, and I guess it requires a lot of vision. And as an investor, you kind of have to share that vision with them. So, I mean, Nick, give us some examples. If you had to buy two or three companies that I said you have to hold over the next 10 years, who are you buying and why?
So, you know, I must just caveat this by saying this is not financial advice. don't go straight away and buy these shares.
Okay, genuine noted.
Due diligence. But so I mean, three that stick out for me that I'm bullish on. So the first one would be Tesla. Despite the fact that it's done well, I think it is it's demonstrably very, very early days for electric vehicles.
That's one I've had wrong for a long time.
I think it's still early days and you've got electric vehicle penetration going up, and then you've got these other sort of almost science fiction type ventures on the side, like autonomous driving, which I think they'll solve. So you've got Tesla, and I think Tesla's going to become, you know, one of the biggest and most important companies, if not the biggest company by market cap in the world over the next 5 to 10 years. Then next I would say a stock that has been very successful for us, but I still think it's got a long runway ahead, is SEA in Southeast Asia. It's a gaming and e-commerce company. And then finally, I would say Mercado Libre, which operates in Latin America. It's basically the Amazon / Alibaba of Latin America. You know, it's less than $100 billion market cap. I think in time that could still go up multiples of its current market cap. So Tesla, C, and Mercado Libre for long-term shareholders, I think will still do well.
Well, there you have it, guys. Tesla, C, and Mercado Libre. And one last question, Nick. I mean, I know you hate questions like this, but you have to acknowledge that tech shares have had one heck of a run over the last 12 months. Chatting to Joe Bassett earlier, he's certainly worried about where valuations sit at the moment. Are you still finding value in the market?
Look, I would say, you know, perhaps not value in the traditional sense as in mm-hmm. kind of low PE.
Mm-hmm.
I find value in the sense that, you know, perhaps not in the market as a whole, but in individual shares, where I think over time you can find individual multi-baggers, and your shareholder return is going to come from the growth rather than from buying a low P.
Right.
But as for the, you know, the market as a whole, my whole career people have been saying that the market's too expensive. That might prove true shorter term, that you might get a correction over 3 months or 6 months or whatever the case may be. But generally being in equities, I still think is going to be, you know, better than your alternatives than fixed income, you know, offshore fixed income. So probably a volatile ride, but I think that's what ultimately you're going to be paid for.
Oh, well, there you have it. Thanks, Nick. We'll have to leave it there. When we return, we'll be chatting to Liam Hechter from Musgrave Capital Partners about emerging markets.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Right, welcome back, guys. The next guest we're chatting to is Liam Hechter from Musgrave Capital Partners in the UK. Now, Liam, you're still a South African boykie. You still buy Boerewors and put brandy in your Coke. But years ago, you decided to pack your bags and leave for London to build an emerging markets fund. So I think you're the perfect guy to be chatting to this morning. We're talking about some of the key investment themes for the next 10 years. You know, the way I see it, when South African investors look to invest offshore, we instinctively look to the developed markets to diversify our portfolios. Tell us a little bit more about what we're missing out on by ignoring emerging markets other than South Africa.
Morning, Henry, and thanks for having me. And sure, I still do like those South African things very much, based in London. So I think to start off with the role that emerging markets can play typically would add a bit of diversification to the portfolio. And I think that it's quite an emerging, and from investors that come from emerging markets, it's probably quite a common theme that they would look to diversify away from EM when they leave their home country. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's quite understandable. But in terms of what they're potentially missing out on, and particularly over the next sort of 10 years, if you want to project out, is the opportunity set that's present in many of the other emerging markets other than the ones that they're from, like, for instance, South Africa. And those are largely underpinned by large addressable markets, big populations, younger populations, and lower GDP per capitas that are growing off a much lower base than in the West. So just some big structural tailwinds in those markets. And then just going, honing in on the actual capital market structures, a lot of them are less sophisticated, and with the intention to sort of become more open and more sophisticated. And what we've typically found is that there seems to be a lot of dislocations that can be taken advantage of, between the sort of fundamental value that a company could typically trade at, taking into account all the different sort of risk overlays that one would need to place on those businesses,
right,
and then the price that they're trading at. So there's, in terms of the opportunity set, we've just found that there's an incredible set out there that we don't think investors should sort of gloss over. We think that's worth exploring.
Well, let's dive straight into that. So, I mean, what are the themes you're most excited by? Which companies are you buying?
Sure. So I wouldn't describe ourselves typically as thematic. So we wouldn't necessarily start with a top-down theme and then go and look for companies within that. I would say that our approach is more bottom-up. But, you know, the companies that we typically invest in, they probably would also fit in some thematic type of portfolio process, because a lot of them have this sort of underpin around them of quite a big structural advantage or structural outlook for the specific markets that they operate in. So, I think the themes are probably quite simple and common across the world and would probably find themselves in a normal developed market or globally diversified portfolio. And you know, things like focusing on the consumer and how the sort of the dynamic, the interplay between the consumer today is and what was in the past in terms of digital adoption and e-commerce, digital commerce and the way businesses interact with consumers and each other. I think that sort of underpins a lot of the different investments that you would probably find with big structural tailwinds behind them. You know, things like fintech would also fit into that,
right,
into that bucket.
Yeah. Right. Well, you knew I wasn't going to let you go without asking you about China today. Obviously, a hugely topical issue at the moment, not least because the average South African investor has massive exposure to Naspers. I mean, a lot of the Chinese tech counters are down more than 40%. With the next kind of 5 to 10 years in mind, is this a generational buying opportunity, or are you guys a little bit more cautious?
Yeah, so I think, you know, going back to first principles in terms of you know, not wanting to bucket all of them into under one umbrella. I think that each company has got nuances that are relevant to each. So, but I think, you know, just trying to create some kind of mental image in your head as to the size of the opportunity there over the next 10 years, you know, I think we mustn't lose sight of the fact that the opportunity is still, yes, a generational one. I would sort of use that word to describe the opportunity set there in terms of the size of the emerging middle class in China, which we expect to probably double over the next 10 years.
Right.
And disposable income doubling over roughly the same time period. So, you know, the total retail market size in China is already roughly the same size as the US. So there is a huge opportunity there and probably still in what we would say is like the first or second innings of where this could potentially end up. So we think that there's still a lot of runway for growth. But one's going to have to be probably a little bit more detailed in terms of how they want to approach it, as opposed to just blindly going after every single stock that sort of fits the thematic. That fits the thematic. So we probably more circumspect over the very large tech companies, but then, you know, below the surface there are some pretty exciting businesses. If you look at just you know, one example would be the exclusivity regulations that came in at the beginning of the year in e-commerce.
Yep. You
know, the Alibaba was really targeted there by using probably taking advantage of their dominant market position and in their negotiating power with merchants, and as a result of them not being able to exercise their exclusivity practices, effectively making merchants choose one e-commerce platform over another. The second order impact was that the other e-commerce platforms were net beneficiary of that.
Right.
You know? So I think that it's worth just doing a little bit more work as to how you approach it. But certainly the drawdowns and the price action would pique interest. And you know, when the emotion's out of the current turmoil mm-hmm. that the market's going through, you probably find as the dust settles, this is presenting some pretty attractive opportunities. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Liam. That's all we've got time for today. That was Liam Hechter, manager of the Musgrave Capital Partners Absolute Return Fund. In Simon's words, we appreciate the early morning. Right, folks, that's all we have time for today. The MoneyWeb Now, Simon's on Leave edition will continue tomorrow. There's some great guest hosts lined up for the rest of the week. We've got Narina Fisser from ETFSA tomorrow, the legendary Pietri Riedelinghuis of Herenia Capital on Wednesday, and Matete Tolare from Rand Merchant Bank on Thursday. A big thank you to the MoneyWeb Now team for your help this morning, and I look forward to joining you guys again soon as a guest. This hosting business is just too much like hard work. Have a super Monday, everyone.
This show was brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.